I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Hey, everybody, welcome on in. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us on a Tuesday. Scott Mitchell to my right. I'm Alex Keery. The crowd goes wild. So much good stuff going on in the world of sports these days, and we hope that you're participating in some form or fashion. 705 cut. Let's get to some of the biggest stories of the week. Scott, you okay with that? Is that where we should start?
I'd love it. Yes, let's go. Come on.
Let's do it.
The cut at 705. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Cut brought to you by Wasatch Medical Clinic. Struggling with ED? Sick of pills? Visit wasatchmedicalclinic.com for a free offer. You might be thinking to yourself, where's Devin Confusi for the Players Club this week? Shifting Devin's schedule just a little bit because of some travel. I think we got to be fluid like that, Scott, for these millennials, man. Wait, is he a millennial? I think he's whatever the next one is.
Yeah.
Is that Generation Next? Is that a Pepsi? Is that a Pepsi thing? I don't know what that is.
Oops, I did it again.
Either way, Devin's going to be gracious enough to join us tomorrow.
Yeah,
for
what are they these days? I know.
No, I don't know. It's either a letter or
like
a number.
Z?
Yeah, no, Gen something. We've run out of letters. We started way too late in the alphabet, so we're going to have to wrap it back around. It's like ordering at the deli.
What are you?
I'm technically a millennial. Isn't that weird?
Are you really a millennial? Yeah. Oh, that explains a lot of stuff.
Well, come on.
What do you think I am?
I'm just a baby boomer.
No, I'm the generation after the boomers.
Yeah, is it Gen Y?
I'm an
Gen X.
I'm a Gen X.
I can't remember which one's it.
I'm an X.
Either way, send Scott a text and
how do you go from letters to millennial?
I don't know because I think we were that weird. I think our group was that weird. So here's what we're gonna do. Speaking of guys who have to deal with the new generation of folks and with the and with all of these Gen Xers or Gen Yers or whatever we want to call them. Kyle Whittingham has got quite the week dealing with walking up to San Diego State after a lot of the mistakes that the Utes made. A very un-Ute-like performance against BYU on Saturday. Kyle Whittingham moved right on, talking about San Diego State, of course, as they go down to San Diego this weekend. Here's what he had to say about coming back from that loss and getting better this week.
They handled Arizona with no problem at all. I mean, it was not even a contest. And so it was impressive to watch that tape and see how they operate. They got three good backs. They got a quarterback who does a great job running that offense. They got a couple tight ends that they really like, and they got some wide receivers that are playmakers. And the offensive line is physical. We're going to see every bit as physical an O-line this week as we did last week, which means we got to rise up and, play much better.
I think you're going to see a very different Ute team down in San Diego State than you did this last week.
I mean, part of this is he's like, I thought my team was ready, and they did not show up last week. Emotionally, they didn't fight. They just didn't play like a team that's normally the Utah mantra. But I'm sure Kyle Whittingham is very nervous in that Weber State actually moved them on the ball on Utah. I mean, there were times when Weber State marched down the field very, very similar to what happened with BYU. And these were long drives. I mean, 11, 14, 14-play drives.
Yeah.
And it was consistently happening during the game. And Utah defensively just could not find a way to get off the field consistently against BYU.
Well, here was what he did say about that, some of the miscues and some of the defensive problems that they had against BYU down in Provo.
Two different issues. On offense, our main issue was mental mistakes. We didn't get beat physically. You know, we blew assignments way too often on offense, particularly up front. Defense was the opposite. We were assignment sound, but we just got physically moved around and worn out.
That's a
yeah. I think there was some unassignment sound too, though, on the defense.
Some
as
things
well.
That they
yeah.
missed as well. Well, certainly.
So, okay.
What do you tell these kids?
Well, no, it's I'm still hung up on
Scott. You got to move on to San Diego State.
No, I can't. I this still is bugging me.
What's
bugging me about it is how do you have 10 days, and how do you have all these missed assignments? Because one of the things that really jumped out at me in the first game was how efficient Utah was. Like they didn't have miscues. They didn't have a lot of issues happening. They didn't forget things. And the more I've thought about this, and number one, Utah's a young team. Okay. They're a young team, but I think the crowd got to them. I think the bigness of the game actually got to them. I think that had more of an impact on this game than anything else. So when you're young and you get nervous, what do? You tense up. And I just saw a lot of tenseness by this Utah football team. It reminds me of 2018 when Utah lost its first two regular season contests. And you just go, oh, the season's over with. Like, they look so bad. And then all of a sudden they go to Stanford and they win at Stanford, and it really just turned everything around.
And Stanford was what? They were like 17th, I think.
Stanford was really good.
They were ranked and they were good.
And so much of it.
Then you're like, then there's this thing about like, well, we know what we got now. We know we have the talent there.
Right.
We have those pieces, and we just hadn't put it all together in those first two games.
I think this team's better than that one across the board. There's more talent offensively.
Well, that should be.
And there's more talent defensively too. I mean, or you look at the roster and you go across and you just go, This is a pretty darn talented team here. So, but Utah typically starts slow. They just do, and it just takes some time to really kind of figure this out and really kind of get it rolling. So I think folks need not to necessarily panic at this point. I think Coach Whittingham
said that in the same breath that you were just like talking about how you're still hung up on that BYU loss. Come on. Look,
well, I'm hung up on it because I don't understand it. And then as I think through it, I'm like, you know what? The problem is they choked.
Now, San Diego State is an even more run-based team. They have, as Kyle Whittingham said, three really good backs. BYU was kind of the same way, where they have a couple really strong backs in the backfield, and they were switching it up between Lopini Katoa and Tyler Algier, and then you had the guy who actually led or was second in the game in rushing, which is Jaren Hall. He probably should have been first with that longer touchdown.
Jaren Hall was the problem against. He was the difference. You know, if they don't have Jaren Hall, then maybe they beat San Diego.
If you're Arizona State against Utah later in the year, do they just watch that film and go, "Hey, Jaden Daniels, like this is the formula"? Because Jaden Daniels has had he's had issues with Utah. Utah's kind of figured him out a little bit.
Yeah.
And if he could have the type of game that that Jaren Hall did, that might be a tough out for Arizona State as well. We've got a lot to still break down when we come back. So what does Utah have to do to focus on? Scott's going to break down a little bit better what Charlie Brewer can break down and do better, because it was a very different Charlie Brewer game one to game two. I want to know what that difference was and what needs to get better. We'll come back. More to go. Stay right here with us on KSL's Unrivaled on KSL News Radio.
Sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. You know, one of the things that I find very interesting is aging athletes.
How old are we talking?
Well,
like they're still playing? Or
after they're retired. Okay. And you look at them and you go,
yeah, there's an ESPN 30 for 30 up, and like they're showing the 86 Mets. It's kind of a feature on the 86 Mets. So then you see like old Daryl Strawberry,
right.
Old Lenny Dykstra.
Yes.
And you start to go, old Keith Hernandez. And yes. You're going, yeah, man, these guys, when they were in their prime, I mean, that was.
Because, like, I don't feel like I've changed. I feel like I look
38 years ago, man.
I look exactly how I used to look.
No, right? For sure.
Yeah.
No. Scott, whatever everybody else tells you, they're lying.
Okay? I actually think I look better. And I think some of these guys actually look better when they – you know who
not kind of, Lenny Dykstra.
No. Let's get past the Mets. I'll tell you someone who I think actually looks good.
After their playing days.
Yes.
Who?
Brett Favre. I think Brett Favre looks better now than when he played.
He looks like, you know what, because he does those Wrangler commercials. Well,
and he has the peppery rugged cowboy look.
It's like, if I could wear the same compression copper gloves that he does while I'm in the garden and keep my joints loose, Scott, I could be just like Brett Favre. So, yeah, Brett Favre's one of those guys. Tom Brady looks exactly the same.
Yeah.
He's the same age as Brett Favre.
But have you seen Tom Brady, though? His look through the years.
Yes, he was almost in way worse shape at the beginning.
Like changed her look all the time to stay relevant, right?
So yeah,
she reinvented herself.
He got skinnier, and he was like, I think it's hilarious. He does these Subway commercials. Have you seen them all? He does these Subway commercials, and their whole thing is like, Tom, why are you doing these commercials? You don't even eat bread. He's like, I quit it. It's a commercial. But which is great.
Look, I give my sandwich to Gronkowski.
Right. Yeah,
Gronkowski will eat the sandwich.
Gronk loves the multigrain bread. All right. Scott, I want to bring up Charlie Brewer's play on Saturday. It was a very different outcome, obviously, in the game versus BYU, but it was also just a very different Charlie Brewer than we saw. The guy who was in total control against Weber State and save a few drops from his teammates, he was pretty perfect in that first outing against Weber State. So if you were to get into a film room with him and to talk to him about some of the things that happened in that game against BYU, what changed from game one to game two, and what does he need to improve on?
What I think really happened to Utah was having turnovers early, and I think it shell-shocked. I think it surprised them. I think they were like, oh, my goodness, and they just didn't respond to adversity very well.
Besides, BYU only got 3 points off those two turnovers.
Right, but it was just psychologically. So when your offense is trying to get in a rhythm and really flow, and that's what turned around for Utah. The offense looked so similar to this a couple of years ago early on in the season. They were just a little bit disjointed, a little bit out of sorts, whatever, and so it's finding those high percentage plays that really just get you in a flow and really get you going. And when we had Jaron Hall on the show last night, I was asking him because I wanted to know, like, how much emphasis do you put on third down during the week? Because it just feels to me like third down for Utah right now. See, look at Dwight Gooden.
Yeah, Dwight Gooden.
He doesn't even
better.
Look like. Well, yeah, I didn't even know it was Dwight Gooden other than his name was underneath.
I know.
It just looks so different.
It looks good.
But when you just kind of treat it like another down, and sometimes those practice habits don't. There's not a sense of urgency in the game. Like, we've got to convert this down because we've got to keep this drive alive. And I don't find that sense of urgency with Utah on third downs. I haven't seen it yet in two games where we've got to convert this. We've got to make this matter. And I don't know what it is, if it's better play calling, if it's better execution, if there's a focus on it. But that's one of the big things that needs to change with the quarterback play, a sense of urgency on third down and getting into a good flow and a comfort level on those first downs and especially early in the game.
Is his quarterback play, did it go downhill, and is it one of those things where, because I had a couple people over the weekend who were like, I guess we basically got ourselves another Jake Bentley here. I don't think they're in that
situation. Oh, heavens no. No. Look, Charlie Brewer didn't play poorly in this game. They marched the ball down the field late and had a chance to win it. There wasn't this sense of urgency because he didn't really make two bad throws. He made one bad throw, but it was on fourth down.
Yeah.
And it was on an easy throw, and it was kind of in a situation where he makes that throw 10 out of 10 times. I mean, that throw to the flat where he should have completed it, he just overshot the runway, and sometimes that happens. Sometimes it happens early in the season. When you have a veteran guy like this, you they'll bounce back from it. And it may be next week, and so you got to expect to see a much tougher, a much more resilient Charlie Brewer this week than you saw last week.
If you look at the rest of the schedule, the BYU game doesn't need to – nothing has to happen with BYU. Nothing needs to – I mean, the game is – Utah's 1-1. They haven't even started Pac-12 play yet, and they're not going to start Pac-12 play even this week. And so, not that you want to just go, wow, we're taking this week off until we get to the Pac-12 play, but this is one of those times where they can kind of still, they get a little bit of a mulligan this week to go, all right, before we get back into conference play, let's reset here. Let's focus on those goals. I mean, it's an interesting thing because we're talking about things that, when have we ever had to talk about a Kyle Whittingham team that was so outplayed or like, you know, just didn't feel motivated? I think the thing that comes to mind is the Pac-12 championship game maybe against Oregon, or that in that same year, that Alamo Bowl against Texas, where it was just like, it doesn't even feel like they want to be here, you know, like, or they weren't ready for whatever this was, or it just seemed like a little bit of a letdown. So not that Kyle Whittingham hasn't lost games before in his career, but just to see the, you know, Utah get out pushed on the offensive defensive lines was a wild thing to me. Usually they're the more physical team. So does there need to be more run? Does there need to be more of a run game? Does there need to be more of a pass game? Have you been impressed at all by the wide receivers so far, or what? I mean, obviously the tight ends are really good. So what is the game plan?
I don't know what the game plan last week was. I didn't feel like they really knew what they wanted to do. I don't feel like they felt confident in anything that they were calling. And you have these – Salmonidis is a very talented wide receiver. Britton Covey, Brant Keithy. I mean, Utah's got talent. They just never seem to find a way to get the ball to people. Now, when you're not consistently having drives, it's really hard to get everyone involved in the offense. You have to wonder if maybe sometimes it's too many people. There's too many things that Utah can do, and you kind of have to pick your poison in some, you know, just what is it? And so when you get in those tough situations, you go to those guys that you can count on. You go to your playmakers. You find ways to get them the ball, you know, like Utah found Brant Keithy on the post touchdown, and that's what you really want to look for in those situations.
You know what's funny is everybody in the booth saw that coming. Like, we were watching it, and we were like, Brant Keithy's going to be over the middle. It's going to be like the easiest catch, and he was. It was just like, it was insane to see when they actually put those things together that, you know, that guy's going to be NFL talent, so you might as well use those guys.
Really, if you look at last week's game, it was like BYU was either going to drop eight or they were going to rush and put pressure. And so Utah, it felt like it was just trying to guess, when are they going to do that? When are they not going to do that? And big plays are there when you have teams that do that, and you just got to take advantage when you get those opportunities. And Utah just didn't in a lot of situations.
Let's take our second break here. And when we come back, let's get back into a little bit of Big 12 talk. I've allowed myself to go like a few minutes, a few moments during the week without talking about the Big 12. So now that it's Tuesday, I'm going to get into it with BYU entering the Big 12 in 2023. But I don't want to talk about football. You'll be surprised. I want to talk about basketball, and I want to talk about how important that move is. It's just as big of a move, I think, for the basketball team to be in that Big 12 as the football team in terms of exposure and in terms of being competitive right off the bat and keeping Mark Pope around in Provo for as long as you can. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. We've got more to go. News, traffic, and weather right now at the bottom of the hour. Plus, I'll tell you where we're going to be tomorrow for our Tour de Fans. Stay with us here on KSL's Unrivaled.
The sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Thanks for being with us. Thanks for listening to the program. Hey, and if you miss any of it, you can always download the podcast wherever podcasts are found, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Do we sound different in the podcast, or is it kind of like similar?
No.
Same stuff?
You can slow it down, though. You ever done the thing where you slow down the podcast? Scott, great point.
Well, that's how I sound normally.
But I do the
thing
where
if you slowed
it
down and I talk slow.
Speed it up.
I probably wasn't even talking.
I listen to podcasts at 1.5 speed. Yeah, because I got things to do.
You got things to do.
Yes. So it's the best way to do it. Can't listen at times two speed. That's way too fast for me.
See, I listen to the podcast with the subtitles on.
Jeez. boy. This is a guy I work with every day. Hey, guess what? We've got to get into some stuff here when it comes to BYU and the Big 12. One of the things that happened today is BYU dropped their schedule for this year for basketball, and I thought, oh, this is good. Mark Pope has been busting his tail, recruiting, getting out there. Last week when we were at the Marriott Center for one of our remotes, I was looking at the basketball annex, and I was like, man, this place is beautiful. BYU has a 20,000, almost 20,000 seat stadium arena with the Marriott Center there, a beautiful basketball annex that rivals any other place in the country in terms of like nice facilities. And I thought that's a great fit to this new Big 12 addition. But the more important thing is that everything changes now with an invite to the Big 12. We talked about how Kalani Sitake and BYU football, that'll be a fun move for them to be able to play a bunch of teams from Texas, get some of those old rivalries back like TCU, and to be able to go, hey, this is big-time football. But in the Big 12, big-time basketball, the success in the Big 12, it really is about basketball. When you think about the current national champion, Baylor, when you think about the classic program that is the Kansas Jayhawks, Texas Tech was in the Final Four a couple of years ago. This has been so much of an improvement for BYU when it comes to this. And a guy like Mark Pope, Scott, I know this for a fact, as soon as he got signed to replace Dave Rose as the basketball coach, they were already going, how can we keep this guy around? Because you can't keep a guy like Mark Pope around if he's super successful, even if you do have the draw of him being an active LDS church member, even if you have all these things where he loves BYU, he likes being there. The guy didn't go to BYU for school, right? He went to Washington and Kentucky. He won a national championship in Kentucky. So you're waiting. If he has all this success, which he's already had, then you're on a timer. Okay, when does he leave the WCC and go to a big program? And you start to think about big programs, the Big 12 comes up, the Big 10 comes up, the ACC comes up, the SEC comes up, actually probably in that order, right? Because the ACC dominates basketball, the Big 12 dominates basketball, so does the Big 10, and the SEC is not as strong as those other conferences. But now you can actually have Mark Pope as a long-term situation. Or am I wrong here? Is this one of those things where he goes, yeah, I will stay at BYU longer now if I know that I can play Kansas once a year at the Marriott Center?
I think one of the most fascinating things with BYU entering the Big 12 is how much does it really change recruiting? And everyone says, well, you know, at Utah, and it did. When they entered it, a Power 5 conference, recruiting changed. You could get better athletes. Now, did it help them in basketball? It hasn't. It really hasn't. And,
right.
And the Pac-12 isn't necessarily known as this great basketball league. I mean, traditionally, you know, UCLA. And
Larry Krzyzewski struggled.
He really did. And a lot of people really liked him and thought he was kind of the answer. But it hadn't equated to a great success. And Utah's basketball program has some history to it. It's not chump change. But I think if you get a guy like Mark Pope, who we like and you've had on the show, and he's a charismatic guy, I think if anyone can sell BYU to some of these top-tier athletes, it's Mark Pope. And I think a lot of it is because of his life experience.
But I
think it helps him that he didn't go to BYU, and I think it helps him that he understands middle America. He understands Kentucky and some of the places where basketball's played and where they're going to recruit players. And there's really a world to recruit players right now.
Well, and that's what I was going to say but some of the difficulties of recruiting guys to BYU, those are going to still exist inside the Big 12. And so, but Mark Pope has been able to mitigate some of that with the experience of, they have kind of a formula, too, where they'll get guys to come in from the transfer portal and go, look, I just need one fantastic year out of you, right? But it's getting to be more than that. They're getting guys to commit for long-term to BYU who aren't traditionally, they're not the guys that, hey, I'm back from my mission, and I'm now here to play basketball. These are guys who probably would never have picked BYU, but now Mark Pope has put BYU on the map when it comes to recruiting.
You don't need 10 or 12 guys. You just need one or two. Really talented guys that can make a huge difference on your team. And so it's very doable. It's very doable for BYU basketball to really up its game and get into a different class of basketball. I still think, though, that the world stage, and especially with BYU and its reach around the world, and that there wouldn't be opportunities to find talent that would definitely come to BYU. And I'm not saying I don't think that people won't come to BYU. I think BYU actually has a very good story to tell, period. And I think if you're a parent and you want your student athlete to have an amazing experience and to really be pushed in all areas of their life, you know, BYU is a good place to go. It really is. And some people go, well, you know, we want a more liberal or open college experience, then BYU is probably not the best place to go. But I think a lot of parents would feel secure in knowing that their kid went to a very, very good school.
I will tell you, though,
I think it's easier for them in basketball than I think in football.
I really do. I think so too. Yeah. I think so too. But I'll also say that the off the bat, the ones that are going to have success are the other Olympic sports. The big ones are going to have to take a back seat for a little bit, because BYU in women's volleyball is going to be, like, right off the bat, probably one of those favorites in a really, really strong conference, because they're always very good. There are going to be some other sports that win Big 12 championships way before, I think, basketball and football do.
If you look at basketball right now in the West Coast, you go Gonzaga, right? But if you look at football in the Big 12, you take Texas and Oklahoma out of the equation.
It's a very different conference.
Who's there?
No.
What I'm saying is BYU has a shot to compete for a championship in the Big 12.
Are you one of those guys that believes that it was there's now only P4? It's a P4 conference?
I don't care about this.
Okay. We're going to take the break here. We'll come back. Got more to go. We got our MVPs around the corner. We haven't done MVPs in a minute, so let's do it when we come back. I've got a great one. Scott's still working on his in the break here, so let's take the break.
I'm not working.
Okay, sorry.
It's my rest time right now.
All right, we'll come back. More to go here on KSL's Unrivaled.
The Unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crown tonight's most valuable player. The Unrivaled MVP.
Okay, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell and Alex Curry, your host here. I'm Scott. He's Alex. Alex does what most men do. They hold the remote in their hand during the break.
I wanted to get to an actual baseball game.
Oh, sure you did.
We got Twins and Indians. It's a massive AL Central battle here.
I missed something, and I'm regretful of it.
What?
I missed
your kids' birthdays.
Well, no.
Oh.
No. I actually put reminders on my phone.
What'd you miss then?
I missed Peyton Manning and Eli Manning's Monday Night Football analysis. And I really wanted to watch, and we've watched a little bit of it since.
Yes, I watched some of it last night while it was going on.
It feels like Saturday Night Live meets Monday Night Football.
They're definitely they're trying a lot of stuff. And they can, because it's basically an alternative broadcast to what the traditional Monday Night Football broadcast is. And it's just Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, making fun of each other, going back and forth. But they're also, we watched it for a minute, and I was like, Scott, listen to what they do. They give, the full, play breakdowns, some of the defenses that they're looking at.
Yeah, it's a little bit,
they're overdoing it, but it was fun. It was fun
completely
still
overdoing
to have, Peyton kind of explain, look at these words that they're all using here. Those are not plays. That's just shifts, and that's I'm fascinated by it.
Football players.
I love
football
how you roll your eyes.
They're not that smart, Alex.
Oh, okay. All right.
We can't
you
say
had
that
one
many
chance.
Words.
I set you up to be able to be like, oh, yeah. No, listen, we study.
You can't be a dummy and play.
I get you.
Don't have to be Einstein either.
No. Who was the smartest player that you ever played with?
Smartest player
with? Yeah. Somebody that you were like, man, that guy's kind of a little bit of a brainiac.
Mike Johnson.
Did he go to Stanford or Harvard or something?
No. He was a Virginia Tech guy, and he was actually – he got his degree in architecture.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Very smart guy.
Lots of Harvard – or lots of – Ryan Fitzpatrick's a Harvard guy.
Yeah, but I didn't play with him.
No, I know, but I'm saying there are guys who come from those extremely smart backgrounds.
John Offerdahl, he was a pretty smart guy.
All right.
Went to Western Michigan.
Oh.
But smart people come from Western Michigan, too.
I love how you're like, let me qualify this. I've known some smart people before who've been out of Western Michigan. Oh, the Western Michigan, what are they? The
That,
they're the Mustangs or something
they're
like
the,
that?
They're the Kellogg Cornflakes.
No, because they're Central Michigan. They're the Chippewas.
Oh, the old Chippewas.
Right? Eastern Michigan, they're something else. And then Western Michigan. If you're a directional Michigan school, you're not the Michigan school that everybody else usually is talking about.
Yeah, and so, supposedly Michigan is a smart school.
Michigan and Michigan State, both really good schools. All right, Scott, our MVPs.
Yes.
Do you want me to go first? Can I go first? Or you want to go first? You go first. You go first.
I think mine, it's kind of, it's, well.
Okay, you have to like kind of.
I don't know what I have to do with
this. If
you
have to explain it.
So my MVP is Blake Griffin, and he's my MVP because he paid tribute to Norm MacDonald, who passed away today, former Saturday Night Live
cast member. I'm so sad about Norm MacDonald passing away.
Who did a spot-on imitation of Burt Reynolds. I mean, that was just such the best part of Norm MacDonald with the mustache, and he does the whole
Jeopardy.
Yes, and just
that's a big hat. Yeah. Funny.
And then, of course, we hear this joke he tells today about a moth.
Right.
And it was just,
it's amazing.
It was just brilliant.
We went back and watched some Norm MacDonald today in honor of the now fallen comedian. He said something interesting, too. I was going to say something that he did because he passed away from cancer, 61 years old. And he said, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, I'm not a doctor. Of course, in the way say it in the Norm MacDonald voice in your head.
Yes.
I'm not a doctor, but I see it. If I die from cancer, the cancer dies with me. So that's kind of a tie. Like that's the way he right. put it. And it was also like a little mini victory that I thought too, where you go, yeah, you know what? Maybe it did take him, but it can't take anybody else. That cancer can't take anybody else. He's going to take it with him. They're going to both kind of, it was dark. And it was before he passed away, but 61 years old. Yeah, Norm MacDonald, I was really bummed that he passed away.
And basically saying, look, it didn't beat me.
Yeah.
Like it was a tie. So
you know he didn't. Never learned to drive. Norm MacDonald never learned to drive.
Yeah.
And he ate like kids' sugar cereal like almost all of the like meals.
Some
of
people
the day.
Might say I've never learned to drive.
I know, but he
and I have a driver's license.
I know, but he would literally have you drove your truck here today.
Yes.
Norm MacDonald had like people drive him around. Like and he lived with his mom for a long time.
I'm getting
long
to a
time.
Point in my life where that wouldn't be all bad to have someone.
Should
just,
we send a car?
Just drive me.
You know,
I'm going to try to get one of those like self-driving cars.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I can
yeah,
just,
yeah.
You just go and it. Anyways, Blake Griffin.
Yes.
Who's
kind of a he does the comedian thing. He's trying to do the comedian thing.
The basketball player.
Yes, he's done some stand-up. He's done a lot of on stage performance stuff.
So in tribute of Norm MacDonald, he actually played his press conference from when he won Rookie of the Year. And Norm MacDonald, as kind of a joke, crashed
the press conference.
Acting like he was a member of the media.
Yeah, yeah.
And Blake Griffith points to him and he actually asks him questions.
That's pretty funny.
And he goes, it was his absolute favorite moment of any press conference or anything that he'd experienced.
Cool.
In his career, and so it just kind of tipping his hat, and so I thought that was cool. Blake Griffin tipping his hat to Norm MacDonald, who passed
away.
Like
I said, if you you can actually go find Blake Griffith doing stand up. Go look it up.
Really?
He actually has a really good stand up routine. He works on it, and he's a funny dude.
See, I don't see that, but
I know that's the thing is that he you wouldn't think it. But you can go look it up. He's had some. He's done some hours up on stage, man. He's done some hours. So.
You know who made me laugh?
Who?
Bill Engvall. When I saw him for the first time.
Now that's one of the redneck comedy tour guys, right?
Yeah.
Which one is he?
He's the.
He doesn't have the.
Here's your sign.
Oh, that. Yeah. No, that's. Oh yeah, it is. Yeah, that is him.
Here's your sign.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
You might be a redneck.
That's
Jeff Foxworthy.
Then there's Tater Salad.
And then there's Get Her Done.
Get Her Done. Yeah.
Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about all those guys. Yeah. Well, so Larry Engvall is funny.
No, Bill Engvall.
Bill Engvall. Larry. Larry the Cable Guy.
Larry the Cable Guy is funny, too.
Okay,
but
they're
all alive, so we can't make them MVPs.
No, that's right. My MVP is Josh Gordon.
You know, he almost was at the University of Utah.
Oh, he was? Really?
He was at the University of Utah for spring football, and that was it.
So, Josh Gordon, if you know anything about this guy, in 2013, he led the NFL in receiving yardage with almost 1,700 yards.
He's a talent.
Talented guy. Very much like Antonio Brown in that sense that, like, he is extremely talented and extremely volatile as an individual. He was suspended indefinitely for the fifth time last year when the Seattle Seahawks during the offseason picked him up after his fourth stint in a substance abuse rehab monitored by the NFL. He slipped up in that in his rehab that fourth time, and he was suspended again. And now this year, he went back through the NFL substance abuse program again, and he is going to be reinstated. I think that's an easy one that people could make fun of and go, yeah, this guy's had some a ton of issues, and you don't want to touch Josh Gordon with a 10-foot pole. Josh Gordon's gone to this substance abuse program that the NFL has done now four times. And he's my MVP tonight because he keeps going through it because he wants to change. And it's a reminder that we all have kind of those things where we had to reset, go back to the thing. And like, that's not a substance abuse issue for me. But certainly, like, you and I have talked a lot about how, you know, the food issues.
Weight loss has
totally been one of those issues.
It's killer.
And so I hope that all of us who, you know, hear this story of a guy trying to give it another go, who really hasn't had a significant impact in the NFL for 4 years. And so, but he's, one, kept in shape, according to sources, and then two, he's gone through the program like he's supposed to. And the last thing, look, this is going to be a daily battle for the rest of his life. There hasn't been enough of a motivator yet for him to be able to get there. Money, you know, the family pressures, all those things, none of those things have been enough for him to be able to kick this thing. But he's coming back and he's trying it again. I hope it sticks this time.
I think you fail when you just stop trying. You just got to keep picking yourself up, keep trying.
I'm glad that he's doing it.
Fighting the fight.
I'm glad that he's doing it. We're going to take the break here. We're going to come back. Second hour of the program. We're going to overreact to BYU and Utah so far, two games into the season. And then we're going to invite Jeremiah Jensen to come back on here. We're going to chat about the Raiders, our Silver and Black Attack making a comeback. Silver and Black Attack comeback. More to go right here in KSL's Unrivaled.
KSL FM Midvale, KSL Salt Lake City. KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's KSL's Unrivaled. Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell, a couple things that we got to announce to you. Hey, tomorrow we're going to be at the State Fair for our General RV Tour de France. Fair, so going to be very excited. Scott, we're going to be at the State Fair tomorrow, man.
So I love the fair.
Yeah. And and Devin Cafusi, we're going to have our Players Club. I don't think we're going to invite Devin to the State Fair. He'll be here in studio, but we'll be over there partying. He can hang out here with Alex Brown. They'll have some nice chats.
Have you been to the fair lately?
Probably 3 years ago.
3 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And it is, it's a fun time. So you can come down, you can hang out with us for a little bit and get the family in there and hang out for the fair. All right, because it's been a while since we've been able to have like a real state fair. So hopefully we can have some people back.
Yeah,
and say
it's
hi.
It's the deep fried stuff. It's the food.
Yeah,
it's the, you know.
I like to see those.
The animals.
I like to see the old.
Well, and also the stuff people grow in their garden.
But they also have
like
bands.
A big giant pumpkin.
Yes. Oh, we got pumpkins this year.
The massive pumpkin.
We grew watermelon and pumpkins. See, I should show up. Should I roll up tomorrow with my?
Do you have a prize pumpkin?
Well, it's pretty small, but it's orange. But I will say that the watermelon could be a winner.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'll put a ribbon on that thing. I'm going to show up tomorrow with the watermelon and just see if I can be a late entry.
Watermelon might be one of my favorites.
These are good. We got good ones out of the garden. We picked one too early, and we learned our lesson. So now I kind of know what to look for the ripeness.
Bee stings.
Bee stings?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Bee stings on the outside of the watermelon.
They don't sting the watermelon?
Oh, like you would not believe. Well, that's why your watermelons aren't good.
All right. And then on Thursday we're going to be at the RV show down at the Expo Center, at the Mountain America Expo Center.
I'll probably end up buying an RV.
Don't. Come on. All right.
Why?
We're kicking things off here. Because we've got a show to do that night. Oh. Do all the financing afterward. In the meantime, Scott, before we, by the way, coming up in just a little bit, we're going to have Jeremiah Jensen on here with us. But first, let's jump in here to this, like I said, overreaction to BYU's football possibilities, overreaction to Utah's possibilities here. So I'm looking at BYU's schedule. Now, ESPN's FPI, that is basically a power index, right? And it changes all the time. It's a computer. It basically goes into it. It had BYU kind of a plus or minus 7.5 wins. Now with the win over Utah, it has them winning 9 games. It even has them favored against Arizona State. So BYU fans, you go from last week not favored against Utah. In fact, you're touchdown underdogs. And also on the FPI at that point, you were underdogs to Arizona State. But now they're favored over Utah State, and they could win 9 games. And, Scott, I dare I say that the ceiling for a lot of folks was 9 games. I think now it looks more a little bit like you could really ask if BYU's
gonna,
could be capable of winning 10 games.
They're going to be in the New Year's Day Bowl.
Oh, come on.
Yes.
You watch think it so? Out.
Absolutely.
Well, here, now here, to do that, what do you here, have to? What do you have to do as an independent right well, now to go to a New Year's Six?
Here's where I think their toughest game of the entire year is going to be. I think it's Baylor,
down in Waco.
Yes,
you don't think it's Boise State?
No,
They
play Boise State in Provo.
Yeah, they have them at home.
Nah, they're no Boise. Okay. Boise State can't even get the quarterback.
What
to,
about
to
Virginia?
Play.
What about Bronco Mendenhall
That's
bringing
in
Virginia
Provo.
To
no,
town?
No, Virginia is not.
You great. Know Bronco? Legitimately. Three quarters of that staff all coach at BYU.
Blah, blah,
they
blah,
know
blah,
exactly
blah, blah.
What to do
about,
to go
in
there. They're going to have a chip on their dang shoulders.
No, they're not. They do not want to come to Provo and play. They're like, we would rather go to the dentist all and right. have all of our molars pulled than to have to come here. Here's why I'm saying this. Mm-hmm. What's the last game of the season?
USC.
It's at USC, right?
In the Coliseum.
And I guarantee you, by the end of the year, USC is going to be like, let us get out of this.
Oh,
season.
Because they're going to have an interim
let
head coach.
This just be.
Oh,
done.
What a great time for BYU to get USC.
It's a perfect time.
Because then they're going, at that point, maybe
they've
even
go
hired a coach, but he hasn't really taken over power yet.
No,
they're still going to do the interim
they're
thing.
They're not going to hire a coach this
not
season.
Not during the season?
No. Heavens, no.
Oh, wow.
No. They're going to look, and they're going to wait, and they're going to wait
to see if Urban Meyer gets fired, and then they can hire him during the offseason. Well, I think
they'll win more than 9 games.
So you say the toughest game is against Baylor. Baylor won 2 games last year.
Actually, Arizona State is not going to.
Arizona
be
State
easy.
Is
they're not going to be easy.
I'm more nervous about Arizona State than I am about Baylor.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Baylor has a lot of athletes, but they are. Still a really, really, really new team.
It's just going
a really young team.
It's just going on the road. It's going to Texas. Okay. I think it's a tough thing.
So, but I think now, I think the floor has now moved to 9 games for BYU. I think a lot of people look and say BYU can win out of these next 11 games or whatever they have. Yeah, no, out of these next 10 games, can they win 7 more of them? Yeah, the answer is yes. If you pick out 7 of those games, they could definitely do it. Can they win 10 of those? If they followed up last year with a 10-win season, an 11 and a 10-win season, my heavens.
Yeah.
Now, then there's Utah.
Then Kalani Sitake ends up at
USC. Oh.
Could you imagine?
You know who their defensive line coach is? Vic Soto, former BYU.
Could you imagine BYU beats USC, and then right after
they announce it.
And
now you remember after the Kalani Las Vegas
just doesn't,
Bowl,
Kalani just doesn't leave.
They did the yeah. He just stays at the
he
family
just stays,
stays
there.
There.
Says, you guys, yeah.
I will be
They're
here.
Nice knowing
I'm going to be here downtown for the rest of this of this week, just kind of checking things out. You remember the Las Vegas Bowl when it was Broncos' last game? That's how they announced it. You remember they were like, oh, by the way, great game. Anyway, Bronco Mendenhall, we knew it was his last game. Kalani Sitake is the new head coach. Kalani, you're already here in the building. Tell us what you think about it. It was a weird moment. It was a wild moment. So now what's the floor and the ceiling for Utah football as they're now 1-1 going into this game against San Diego State, who were not – They're not slouches. They played Arizona. Are we moving in the direction of freaking out at this point, Scott, or are you looking at it like, no, this is still a possible Rose Bowl year for the Utah Utes?
I'm freaking out.
Oh, boy.
I really am. I'm freaking out about this because Stanford's good. Utah plays Stanford on the road. A year ago, everyone goes, oh, great, that's a win. UCLA looks like it's a whole lot better. That's in Salt Lake, but it's going to be a tough game. You've got Arizona State's going to be a tough game. Oregon's going to be a tough game. Colorado's going to be a tough game. I mean, the only not tough games, and then I say this, and they'll end up being the tough games, Washington State, Oregon State, and Arizona. So there's three wins right there. So that puts Utah at 4-1 at that point.
They've had struggles with Wazoo before, man.
Well, yeah, that was Mike Leach, though. He's gone.
Okay.
Rolovich, he's who knows where.
Who knows if he's going to even have a job at that
he's
point.
He's vaccinated at this point.
He's not. You know what? Utah should be like, I'm so sorry. You're not allowed to come into the stadium. Yeah. I think he said he's going to do it now.
So it's going to be a really tough. It's tough for me because I don't know who Utah is. And, I mean, this game at San Diego State is no rollover game.
Look, Utah's favored still in 8 of their last 10 games. Oregon and USC, they're underdogs. And USC, you kind of cancel that one out because I think that FPI needs to be updated. Somebody's got to tell the computer that Clay Helton got fired. They're going to have an interim head coach. These kids are going to be lost.
Sometimes those interim coaches, they rally.
You know what you have to do at end of a year like this? Because a lot of those players love Clay Helton. You dip into the transfer portal and you steal a bunch of guys back from USC if you're Utah.
Oh.
And BYU. Get some former USC Trojans in the state of Utah. Let's take the break here. We'll come back. Jeremiah Jensen from KSL5 Television is going to join us for our very first Silver and Black Attack of the 2021. I almost made it 2022, Scott. 2021 NFL season. Stay with us.
All right, sports fans, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery here. So we've had our first week of the NFL. Yes. All of the teams have played,
yes.
Right? Everyone
yes,
played
yes, yes,
the first week?
Nobody gets a bye week one?
No one gets a bye.
Does that happen?
That would be cruel and unusual punishment to give someone a bye week before they've ever played a single game.
Right, then they just have to play 17 weeks in a row. With the new 17-game schedule, do they get 2 bye weeks?
I don't think so. Yeah.
No.
But after watching the first week,
yes.
Who is going to win the Super Bowl? Who do you like in the Super
Bowl?
Well,
not the Green Bay Packers, I'll tell you that. They're going to go 0-17. Aaron Rodgers will throw 0 touchdowns, and he's on pace, Scott, to throw 0 touchdowns and 32 interceptions. No, sorry, 34 interceptions. That's what he's on pace for. So I'm assuming that's how it's going to go. He's going to throw for about 2,000 yards, 0 touchdowns, 34 interceptions. They're going to get dead last. They're going to lose every game. That's the Green Bay Packers for you.
Okay, they're going to lose, but who do you think is going to win?
The overreaction of, oh, this team needs to be considered more for the Super Bowl. I'll tell you, the Chiefs were tough because the Chiefs got the very best Browns.
The Browns are a good football team.
The Browns are a good football team, and the Browns are also like, hey, man, we're going to show up game one, and we're going to punch them in the mouth at Arrowhead. And they went in there and they did. They went in there and punched him in the mouth. And Kansas City still ran up big plays on him, came back, forced mistakes, and then they ended up winning that thing. So
you think it's the Chiefs?
I still think it's going to be the Chiefs. That's my Super Bowl pick. I can't pick Tom Brady in good faith.
You know who I'm going to pick?
Who are you going to pick?
Los Angeles Rams.
They were so good the other day.
I know. I picked him before the season.
But Stafford doesn't know how to really win.
Well,
he doesn't know what being in the playoffs means.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Those Detroit Lions quarterbacks are
terrible.
They have the worst record in the playoffs.
Goodness, those guys are so bad.
In Matthew Stafford's case, they didn't.
Have
even
you
go,
ever lived
did
in
they
Detroit?
Go to the playoffs?
Have you lived in Detroit?
No, but I've been. Yeah. I've been.
Yeah, it's different living there.
Yeah. My wife almost took a job at Ford. I mean, she was there for an internship. Mm-hmm. She really was going to take a job out there before we got married. And I'm glad we didn't.
I'm glad.
I've had those Coney Island hot dogs, though. The
Lafayette Coney Island?
Yeah. You know what they are? They're long cheese dogs.
Can I tell you a quick story about the hot dogs?
Yeah.
So there's two places.
They're right next to each other.
Right next to
I've been to
each other.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law sold ice cream. And he would go, he was the salesman. He wasn't the delivery guy.
Right.
They couldn't get the delivery guys to go to downtown Detroit because they got robbed. So he goes, I'll go to downtown Detroit.
Yeah, why not?
And I go, like, they point a gun at you and rob you. And he goes, we're insured. I just give them the money and they leave. It's not a big deal. And he goes, but man, the hot dogs are worth it.
Yeah.
And he goes, and I go, so you will go get a hot dog and get robbed? And he says, absolutely. I'll do that. And so he's the delivery guy, gets robbed, but
he did get robbed?
Yes.
Oh, of course.
He's
he
been
did.
Robbed three times.
Amazing.
Yeah. Same guy.
Okay.
He goes, I'll be back here next Tuesday.
One of them is like it has like kind of a Greek theme to it. Yeah. Like they do like, so you get the hot dog, but you get the baklava as well.
All right.
It's time. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, but there's another hot dog in Cincinnati. It's like the Skyline Chili dog.
Yeah.
I don't like any of them.
So garbage.
I don't like the one in Detroit.
No, the hot dog. The Detroit one's pretty good.
Can I just tell you the best hot dog?
What is it?
Well, there's J Dogs. Pretty good.
Very good.
Bahama Mama hot dog from Maverick. Amazing. So good. So good.
You just told me everything we need to know about. You're like, yeah, no. I thought you were going to throw out some like gourmet something, rather. Are you talking about the one that's like, are you talking about the jalapeno Bahama Mama?
The Bahama Mama, yes. Oh.
The Silver and Black Attack. Scott and Alex cover it all. As the Raiders pillage and plunder their way in Las Vegas.
Kidnap and ravage and don't give a hoot. Bring up me out of
your. Oh, I missed that music from last season, Scott. It's our first Silver and Black Attack.
Makes me want to go to Disney.
I just want to go to Disney. Pirates of the Caribbean so much. So, the Raiders get a big W in overtime. One of the weirdest overtime sequences I've ever seen in my life in the NFL. And, of course, it happened in Las Vegas. It happened with the Raiders. They had to win twice to get that W last night. But John Gruden, everybody's favorite Chucky doll on the sidelines for the Raiders, got the first win at the stadium for the very first NFL game in that stadium. So, thoughts on the Raiders. Number one, you had the Ravens went in there, and they were coasting on this thing. Here's how difficult of a game this was. John Harbaugh doesn't lose these games. He was 81-0. If he was winning by 14 points or more in his career going into this game, ends up losing it and is now 81-1 because he gave up that lead. And it was all thanks to Lamar Jackson, who is this like, I mean, he's making amazing plays.
Yeah.
And then he fumbled in the fourth quarter and he fumbled in the overtime and it ended up costing his team.
And those are aberrations, really. When you have a great player, they just every once in a while will have a game that's just kind of a bad game. It's like Utah. Utah just had a bad game, and they're probably a lot better team. When you're a team that has to or kind of has a special year, you just have a few of those moments where luck just seems to bounce your way, and that just kind of felt like it for the Raiders. It looked like Baltimore had the game in hand and they were gonna win, but you just have a season and you just go, yep, this is absolutely this is our year, and that's just kind of the way football operates. A year ago, you're just like Derek Carr. Why can't you find ways to win games? The Raiders just couldn't find ways to win games down the stretch, and it just seems like they've matured enough, and it just feels like this. I know it's only one game, but it just feels like it might be their year.
Scott, I was at the Macy's tailgate last week. I met a Utahn who is a season ticket holder for the Raiders. I think there's a lot.
Yes.
Who, you know, they put a bunch of money down a couple of years ago because the stadium was being built and they were, and so you had to get in early. And they finally have been able to get in and start and watching these games. And they were down at this game. And I just think now it's a fun deal to have an AFC West team in Las Vegas and an AFC West team in Denver and having those kind of, you know, a couple of big fan bases. Here in Utah, there are a lot of Broncos fans. And I think that you're coming around to have a lot more of these Raiders fans. And having been in that stadium now, I can tell you it is a venue worthy of Las Vegas. It's a venue worthy of the NFL. So.
Well, given a choice.
Yes.
I mean, and I want you to think hard about this.
Yeah, let me think. The Raiders.
Okay. That's your choice.
Between the Broncos and the Raiders?
Yeah. I mean, which one would you rather go see?
I mean, that's a – you know how I feel about
it. Right.
I'm actually offended you asked that question because you knew what the answer was and – I'm not one of those guys that calls the Broncos the donkeys. I think that's inappropriate.
Oh, that's very inappropriate.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think
maybe the Shetland ponies, but not the donkeys.
I don't think they're the donkeys. Oh. Now that being said, I wish a pox on that team. May they never win another football game again. So, yeah, I'm a Raiders fan. That's the thing. I've been in the stadium now. We now have Las Vegas Raiders cups in our house because that's what we bought when we were at the stadium. So there you go. We're officially Vegas Raiders fans.
You know, if you're a fan in Utah, what a great place to go. And there's a lot of things to do in Las Vegas in the weekend. And it really is not far. It's not far to go. Amazing stadium.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you.
And you're gonna see some great – I mean, I would love to go to a Raiders game, watch Patrick Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs come and play.
Let me just give you a tip. Now that I'm a seasoned Las Vegas traveler to Allegiant Stadium, let me just tell you what you have to do. You cannot take an Uber to the stadium. Okay, do not do it. It will drop you off a mile from the stadium, and you will not be able to get there. Okay, or they'll take you up to the rideshare lot, and it'll take like 45 minutes for you to get in to that area. So don't do it. Park at the Luxor parking lot or at the Mandalay Bay parking lot. Walk across the bridge, and boom, you're there. You got about a third of a mile walk. Easy does it. Boom.
So Uber to Mandalay Bay.
Well, because you can – yes, Uber to Mandalay Bay. Because it's – or if you're parking, you know how it's free to park at the at all the casinos. So park at Mandalay Bay if you're driving, if you've rented a car, or Uber to Mandalay Bay or Luxor, and then you walk across. See, we have all these sorts
of the
tips
night right there.
For all these Raiders fans now that are out there.
You should put that on Pinterest or something.
Travel tips to Raiders games on Pinterest. Have you seen my pin board? I've got some great tips. Scott's like, don't forget to pick up your Maverick Bahama Mama. You doofus.
You could hit Mavericks driving all the way down. Just get all the Bahama Mamas.
Oh, my goodness.
Park at the Luxor.
Scott, Bahama Mamas are not on the plan with soda. Okay?
I know.
Quit it. We'll come back. We got our NFL roundup. We got our two-minute drill. Stay with us here on KSL's Unrivaled. This hour of the program was recorded this very afternoon, and you're the first person to hear it. Congratulations.
KSL's Unrivaled. The Unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade-A pro football stories from your two hosts, a former NFL quarterback and the other guy. It's the Unrivaled NFL Roundup.
I think the deflating whoopee cushion is the part that I get offended by the most. And the other guy.
Oh,
you know, that, right,
it's a little
the deflated balloon.
Yeah.
Makes it sound like.
Yeah.
Although the deflated balloon gives off the image that I'm looking for of the guy who's lost quite a bit of weight in the last little while.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
We'd like to drop the weight, but, you know, you can lose it if you want.
Here's the deal. NFL Roundup. Hey, by the way, by way of announcement, we're going to be at the State Fair tomorrow.
So my parents used to get me out of school and we would go to the fair growing up.
I love the fair. I go to any fair I can. And the Texas State Fair where I grew up, that was big. And we go to Washington, same thing. What I love about fairs is going through the agriculture, like going through the ag barn, you know, and going through and seeing those. And they got ribbons on them. Some kid's been feeding that pig, you know, and just like taking care of it. It's like the prettiest cow that
and
will
the
be.
And the Wilbur exhibit where they, where the little spider does the decoration thing.
Yeah, that's always very popular.
That's one of my favorite ones.
We'll be out there tomorrow night for our General RV
Tour. You know
tour.
It's a good one.
Do fans, yes.
Is the Minnesota State Fair.
Why is Minnesota so good?
Apparently they deep fry everything.
Well, we do it here.
Yeah, no, everything.
Oh.
Yeah.
That one year they did the deep fried stick of butter here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, that it seemed like it would melt.
I know. I don't know.
Ah, you coat it in flour.
Well, there's some melt. It doesn't get through. The heat doesn't get through the flour.
Oh, no.
That millimeter.
So it's Twinkies. That was the big thing at the Minnesota State Fair.
And then the deep fried Oreos became a thing. I saw a guy who did deep fried Kool-Aid out in San Diego. Because they fry everything, too, out there, that guy who's kind of like the frying champion.
And, I mean, the fair is the place where you get that kind of stuff.
That's where you can do that.
Yes.
That's where, deep-fried Kool-Aid. It's basically a batter. It's basically like the funnel cake batter, but with Kool-Aid flavor.
Oh.
I could deal with that.
Well, funnel cakes is a different thing in
and then
of
they'll
itself.
Hit you, and then you hit it with the pixie stick dust on top, not the... Not just the powdered sugar.
No. The pixie
dust. You want a little fruity flavor on that thing. Anyway, now I want to go home and make some for myself.
Yeah.
We'll be at the State Fair tomorrow for a tour to fans. In the meantime, Scott, NFL Roundup. I want to just bring up quickly here. We mentioned it during the Silver and Black attack, but the Raiders give people hope periodically. John Gruden gives you hope periodically. I'm convinced that Derek Carr is just one of these guys. I think he's a younger Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Like, just is not a championship winner,
yeah,
but will throw for 400 yards.
Right.
Do you get that vibe from him that he's, like, not really the killer instinct guy?
He's that level below the elite level. He's a guy that...
Like, he's absolutely serviceable for your franchise.
Yeah. If he's a guy that probably, with the Raiders, won't win a Super Bowl, but he might go to another team and just, like, randomly win one. You know, kind of like...
Nick Foles situation?
Brad John, yeah, or Nick Foles. Kind of that kind of guy.
Well, I was glad for the Raiders to come back. You know what's funny is that my house, my son is like a Raiders fan now. Here's why. We were at that stadium for BYU Arizona, right. And he's like, I'm now.
This is an amazing stadium. This guy.
And the interesting thing is that stadium, they play, BYU and Arizona play on turf. Any college team plays on turf. But then when the Raiders play, they have that grass that rolls in from outside.
Yeah, special grass.
It's because Mark Davis, I think smartly, is like, my guys aren't going to play on turf. I don't want their knees to get all torn up. So they play on full grass, and they don't have to repaint it and do all that stuff.
But the grass stains and stuff like that, that's
tough to get out. Is that what you're saying?
It is.
Those poor team managers.
They actually know some tricks. Those guys are amazing.
So if
you want anything done ever in the NFL, it's go to the equipment manager.
Okay, the team manager.
They can do everything.
That's funny.
Yeah, team manager, I don't know where that comes from, but it's the equipment manager.
No, the equipment manager is the guy.
Yeah.
So is that the guy who used to get your passport for you down in Miami or whatever?
No, that was a special guy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was.
Oh,
like,
that's an illegal situation.
No, it's not illegal. It's just
I got a guy. He's just our
you don't talk about. There's things you talk about. That's
he's
one
our
of those
equipment
you, just,
manager.
You don't talk about.
All right. So first up on the NFL roundup, then I just wanted to pick your brain a little bit about week two of the NFL and how things just they change very quickly because we make all these rash decisions after week one, which are fun. I like to say Aaron Rodgers. I guess his career's over. But Aaron Rodgers says that his loss to the Saints was a good learning experience. Do you believe any of that? Do you believe any of that drivel, Scott? That Aaron Rodgers says that he learned something from losing that game?
I mean, you always the one thing about football, it takes a while to redeem yourself because you got to wait till like a whole week. Whereas basketball, like you're a night away from your next game,
sure.
And so it's a really short memory if you lose a game. Football's a little harder because you have that whole week, but usually teams and players that are good and they lose, they'll have a pretty amazing bounce back from things.
Yeah.
You just have to wonder with Aaron Rodgers how much in the offseason, how much maybe not really playing in the preseason. I just think it takes some time for these teams to really unwind as the season gets started. I've seen teams go 0-2, and everybody writes them. I've been on teams like that, and they go to the playoffs. I mean, the Patriots, the first time they won the Super Bowl, they were 0-2 to start the season. Drew Bledsoe, you know, it looks terrible. And then all of a sudden, they just kind of turn it around. And then you have teams, you think of Pittsburgh a year ago, where everyone was like, man, this team is just amazing. And they just fizzle at the end of the year. It's really, you can't read too much, but everyone does. They think our team's terrible. It's over. Or our team's on its way to Super Bowl. I mean, I played in Cincinnati. We started off 2-0. And all the national media goes, the Bengals are back. You know, they're
right. Well, and just as ridiculous, I love the power rankings in the NFL, too. I mean, college rankings, we totally overdo it in the first week as well. The first 6 or 8 weeks don't matter. But the Saints, they jumped 13 spots into the top five of the power rankings. And the Bills, who were one of those teams that kind of were a favorite for some people to go to the Super Bowl. Oh, they're out of the top three.
Right.
They're gone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like people are saying the Titans are pretenders now. And I'm going, these are all teams. It's going to even out. I'm assuming it's going to even out.
This extra game will even be, I think it'll have more of an impact and it'll keep people in it longer who are trying to figure out things than in the past. I really do. That extra game is huge. The one thing that got me on here.
What?
Is John Gruden saying that Darren Waller is the best player he's ever coached?
So that's their tight end who's like...
Right.
I mean...
But this is the same guy that said Nate Peterman. That Peterman, man.
Nate Peterman. Yeah, but that was him trying to boost his backup guy.
I don't know.
Derek Carr. No, but this is...
That seems like the kiss of death to me.
Yeah, but the last night when I'm watching this thing on ESPN, and I was kind of watching the alternate with Eli and Peyton Manning, they were talking about how he's definitely the best athlete on the field. And that's like with, you know, when they talk about these two teams playing each other, that's with Lamar Jackson on the same field. because they're saying Darren Waller is a 6'6", 238, 240-pound guy, and he's an insane athlete. And you saw kind of how crazy it was last time when he catches this ball, does it like this immediate pivot dive for the end zone, and it was a touchdown. And I thought, and again, the new thing is having a super athletic tight end in the league, right? That's what you.
And I know he's good. I'm not saying he's not.
But John Gruden, I'm trying to think of all the guys he coached.
Nate Peterman just popped into my head. Man, Peterman, I like that Peterman guy.
Knock if you're with me, young man. Yeah, but I was pretty impressed by the comeback. Even though they tried to give that thing away, they got on the field to celebrate, and I was like, "There's no way Renfro didn't get in the end zone. He's going to be a half a yard short." And my wife was like, "Well, they'll punch it in easy here." I go, "The goal line is actually worse. Like, you want to be on like the 14, I feel like, compared to the goal line, because it was just like snap after snap, they couldn't get anywhere." And I thought, man, NFL defenses are so dang good at that goal line. And then Carr ends up throwing a pick off of a guy's helmet, you know, right there. And then suddenly that celebration was going on 5 minutes before is negated. And then Lamar Jackson fumbles, and then they end up throwing a touchdown at the end. The Raiders win twice last night on their opening night of the stadium. So I was pretty excited for him. All right, next up on the old NFL roundup here, Scott, what does this mean that the Texans are keeping Deshaun Watson separated from teammates? How smart is that? This is a guy who's, you know, has pending investigations going on of alleged sexual misconduct with a variety of people that have been his masseurs over the years. I don't know what that does if you keep him separated.
There's a lot of better ways they could have handled this. Clearly, Deshaun Watson is not going to play for the Houston Texans anymore. But they should have traded him. They should have just moved on from it. They should have done something. Literally, what they have to do is he's inactive every single game this year. And they want to keep him away from everything just so he has no influence. So Tyrod Taylor can just kind of do his thing and be the guy, and everyone just say he's our guy moving forward, because Deshaun Watson yields influence in the locker room, and they don't want to have that around anything where everyone goes, "Oh man, so bad for you," and they just want to move forward and still have him there.
Let's take the break here. We'll come back, wrap things up with our 2-minute drill next on KSL's Unrivaled. Stay with us.
Hey, folks, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. I got a fun fact for you, Alex. You ready for a fun fact?
What do you have?
All right. Well, first of all, it's really second of all, because it's the second time that this has happened since 1970.
What?
Three rookie quarterbacks drafted in the first round started NFL games in week one. This is the second time it's happened. So you have Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, and Mac Jones. And their combined start this week, they were 0-3.
Yeah, it was a rough start.
It's more losses than they had combined, all three of them, in the 2020 season. So Zach Wilson had one loss, and Trevor Lawrence had one loss. So they had two losses combined.
I feel like
the
loss that Mac Jones had, was that the only one that Alabama's had in the last however long?
No,
I mean,
Alabama hadn't lost. They didn't lose.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, like, even in the last two or three years.
Alabama, yeah. Geez. Right.
Well,
so, isn't that amazing? And then they go 0-4.
Yeah. What's funny is that varying levels, too, of like they all had their own version of successes that I think in that week one.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Patriots lost by a point to the Dolphins. And I thought that the Panthers came back, but the Jacksonville Jaguars got beat by what we consider the worst team in the NFL, the Texans. So
it looked bad for
you. Yeah. But again,
it's just funny how people like, they're trying to hang on something positive with the young player. Like, did we see anything? Was there something that gives us some hope for the future that these guys might be something?
Yeah, I think they would. I think it's weird to do the whole, "Well, these guys are going to be in the Hall of Fame one day." Who knows? I mean, what?
Those three, who do you think will be in the Hall of Fame? Any of them?
I don't know if any of them. I honestly don't think Trevor Lawrence is necessarily like, I don't know. He's a great player in college. He was great.
You know,
for like a year and a half.
You know, it's hard for Trevor Lawrence.
What?
Urban Meyer is not a guy that's going to stay put in Jacksonville.
Do you think that he's even a guy who can win an NFL championship?
I think he'll figure it out. But I think Urban Meyer is a guy that goes, if I figure out how to win a Super Bowl, I'm out. He's not a guy. He's never been anywhere where he stayed for, you know, a super long time. And when you're a guy like Trevor Lawrence, you want to have a guy like Bill Belichick. You want to have a coach that's going to be around with you for a long period of time.
There's this thing, too, with Zach Wilson. Hold on, let me play some music here. So, we might as well get into the two-minute drill.
Let's do it.
What is the two-minute drill, by the way, since we're talking about it?
Let me tell you. Late in the football game, you got to go down the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown, don't have a lot of time, so you hurry. Our show's the same way. We got a lot to talk about, but not a lot of time, so we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home with two COVID shots, happy and a trophy and whole
bottle
bunch
of water.
Yeah, just water these days. Mm-hmm. You're not even going to let me get into
zero
anymore.
Calories, man.
Well, yeah. You get that.
Otherwise, I'll start thinking about those other things.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
A peanut butter bar. That's
Nelly. One thing that I could never not think about.
What about, have you ever had that creme brulee, Scott?
Yeah.
One of those restaurants?
Yeah.
All right. The old creme brulee.
If I was in Ghostbusters, that it would be a peanut butter bar. That's what the monster would be. It wouldn't be the steak. It would be a peanut butter bar. It's the one thing I cannot not think about is a peanut butter bar.
I don't think that Dan Aykroyd was thinking of something he wanted to eat. His character, was it Venkman? I can't remember what it was. Yeah. I don't think he was thinking about what he wanted to eat. He was thinking about, because when he was a kid, he was scared of the Stay Puft Marshmallow.
Right, yeah.
Man. You're scared of the peanut butter bar now?
Well, I am now.
Just like, a full peanut
butter bar. If I look at a peanut butter bar, I gain weight.
It'll get you.
Yeah, I can't have it.
So I want to talk about the Zach Wilson thing just real quick. Is that, you know, the idea that this guy, after 1 week, is just supposed to figure this thing out and be, you know, the saving grace of this New York Jets team. I was thinking about it because his left tackle is out for the rest of the, or at least out for like 4 to 6 weeks with a dislocated
half the season,
with a dislocated kneecap.
Yeah,
and that's already an offensive line that's not great right now. He got sacked 7 times on Sunday, but I was thinking. All that talk about Robert Saleh and the culture and how he's going to change everything. That offensive line stinks, and they're trying to ask this kid to change the world there. I mean, that's a tough thing to do. You could have the greatest culture on the planet, Robert Saleh, but if the offensive line is garbage, you know, Zach Wilson's going to be garbage.
It just takes time. It really does.
And, we got to be more patient with the whole thing.
And even if you get time, sometimes it doesn't work out.
They won 2 games last year.
There's just so much that goes into.
What's a successful season look like for him? Like win-wise?
Somewhere around 500.
Really?
Maybe.
I mean, that's like a really good year, I think. Yeah. I think like 6 wins.
6-7 wins. Yeah. Somewhere around 500.
Well, because now I think how many games? If they win 6 games, that means they lose 11. So yeah. That's like. That 17th game, it makes it look really bad.
There's just so many things that Zach Wilson's going to run into that he just hasn't run into yet. And
you made it so depressing yesterday when you said, yeah, he had a bad week this week, and guess what? He's going to see something totally different, and it's going to scare him in a totally different way this week.
He'll be like...
He'll be coming after you.
Yeah.
It's going to be bad.
But look at Sam Darnold. I mean, Sam Darnold was lost, and kind of getting a fresh start in a different situation,
okay.
It changes.
Next up on the old two-minute drill here, Scott. Of all the names that are floating around, I've seen Eric Bieniemy, the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs, floating around as the possible name for the USC job. Former Washington and Boise State head coach Chris Peterson was asked about the gig, and he said he's not interested. Is that true? Because the person who's interested in the job that they want to keep quiet about it, they would say they're not interested either. And that's a guy who'd be successful, I feel like, at USC.
Chris Peterson seems to me like a little bit like Urban Meyer, like he could get burned out from things. And I think he knows in that pressure cooker and just...
L.A. might be too not his vibe.
He's more of a, you know, kind of a tucked out of the way kind of person and has his own, you know,
Maybe he takes the Stanford job if David Shaw leaves one day. You know, that's kind of more of the place for him.
You need someone who really wants to be out front, brash, and you know, just kind of center stage kind of person. I'll tell you who, and maybe he doesn't go there, but it's someone at one of these programs, like maybe Lincoln Riley.
Hold on, he's already.
I know what he is. He's a whole. Yeah, I get it.
$11 million at Oklahoma.
I just think they got to get a proven. I don't think they want to go. Let's go find the next newest, greatest, neatest.
I don't think the Eric Bieniemy thing is a real a roll of the dice.
It totally is. And
you need rah-rah guy. The people who had success there most recently is Pete Carroll, right?
And people weren't. They weren't enamored with Pete Carroll, but he understood the culture of USC and how to win there, and it was being glamorous. It was kind of in your face. It was Hollywood, and that's what that's where they are going to thrive is they need some. Clay Helton was just not that. He was not that brash showboat kind of person that they really need at USC.
Scap, that's the end of the show.
Oh, that's just getting started.
I know, right? Tomorrow we will be at the Utah State Fair. You can join us there. Come by.
Deep fry something, aren't we?
Yeah, well,
hey, we should deep fry water.
I guarantee. Yeah, we could. This is zero calories, right?
Yeah.
How do they get the water?
Actually, you put water in a deep fry. That's a recipe.
That's a problem.
Well, the fire department could.
Scott, coat it in flour. Didn't we already learn that in the last segment?
Coat water in flour, and we're good to go. Yeah.
All right. For Scott Mitchell, I'm Alex Keery. We'll be at the State Fair tomorrow for our general RV tour to fans. So for Scott, Alex Brown punching the buttons, Jeremy, our producer. We'll see you next time, everybody.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.